I think we can get ready to begin today's session on state and federal data in the Repowering Mapper 3.0 webinar. So at this time, I'll ask our first speaker to be sure she's unmuted. Laura, I can see you on camera. And then Rebecca, if you can go ahead and pull up the presentation materials, I'll turn the floor over to Laura to get the show started.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Jean. My name is Laura Strine. I'm a team leader for Repowering America's Land Initiative here at EPA. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm really excited to host this webinar highlighting the state and federal contaminated site data in the Repowering Mapper. All of the data that we'll talk about today is publicly available from state and federal sources, and we really want to thank all of our state collaborators for the input that they gave us on their data. The selected state data is really important because many of the landfills, brownfields, and other potentially contaminated sites are included in the state data, but they're not included in federal data sets. The federal data includes a subset of landfill methane outreach program sites or LMOP sites, federal mine sites, all appropriate Superfund sites, and more. So we want to make this webinar as informative as possible for you today. If you would like a more in-depth meeting with your state or federal group or other stakeholder group, please email me and we're happy to schedule that future meeting with you. Today, we will be taking your questions, like Jean said, as we go along in the Q&A. And we are really excited to have Rebecca Kent and Kelsey Blonswick with us. Rebecca is an environmental analyst with GDIT, and she's a contractor to EPA. She's worked on several versions of EPA's Repowering America's Land Initiative Mapper. She's also supported the initiative since its inception on various mapping, data collection, and technical documents. Kelsey is an ORISE Research Fellow with EPA's Office of Land and Emergency Management. She has over a decade of experience working on various aspects in the environmental field. She is a member of the Repowering team, and she's been helping us narrow the universe of sites to match unique needs and situations and help support the recent mapper update. She has a BS in geology from Denison University and an MS in geospatial data analysis and environmental policy from the University of Michigan. So, welcome to Rebecca and Kelsey. Before I turn it over to Rebecca, I want to provide a quick overview of EPA's Repowering America's Land Initiative, just in case there are folks on the line who are not familiar. So the initiative encourages renewable energy development on current and former contaminated lands, landfills, and mine sites when this development is aligned with the community's vision for the site. And the Repowering Initiative works with federal and state partners to identify contaminated lands that might be suitable for renewable energy development and provides technical assistance to communities. So you'll hear us use the term repowering today. This word in this context means siting renewable energy resources on land with perceived or actual contamination. You may also hear us use the term Office of Land and Emergency Management, or OLEM. And part of the office's mission is to encourage redevelopment of contaminated sites. OLEM has other programs that focus on broad topics of redevelopment, but Repowering America's Land Initiative is specifically focused on renewable energy redevelopment at sites. So we provide tools for all kinds of sites, Superfund, RCRA, brownfields, mine sites, landfills, pretty much all of the sites you can think of. We help answer questions about liability, renewable energy, contaminated land. You can see here on this graphic that there are many benefits to communities and lots of reasons why this idea makes sense. We can protect open space. We can provide low-cost power to residents in the community. We can provide revenue to local governments and help local governments meet clean energy and climate change goals. So as we go through this, it's really important to note that repowering projects must consider proper planning, engineering, construction, and operation. It's really important that the development does not interfere with cleanup and does not increase threats to human health or the environment from sites. So we need to take a very close look at sites. And the mapping tool that we're going to talk about today is one way to take a first step in identifying sites that are suitable for renewable energy. So thank you again to Rebecca for joining us today. I'm going to turn it over to her for her presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, Laura. I hope you guys are excited as I am today to talk about the mapper. Like Laura said, my name is Rebecca Kent and I'm with GDIT, and I've been supporting EPA's Repowering America's Land Initiative since about 2008. In April of this year, Repowering released an updated version of the mapper, and that's what we're going to walk through today. So we're going to discuss the data, the screening criteria, assembling all this information. We'll go over some of the mapper upgrades, and then we'll get to the best part of this presentation, that mapper demonstration. We're going to start you guys out here with a polling question, and we'll give you a little bit of time to answer that. So if you wouldn't mind, please answer the question, and then we'll go over those results here after we get majority of you guys answering those.
All right, so I can see responses are starting to come in. If this is a new feature for you in Zoom, there should be a pop-up window that's appeared on your screen. Just click the circle to the left of the answer that you'd like to enter and then hit the submit button. And I can see that about 3/4 of the audience, about 75% of you have voted. There's no wrong answer here. Just makes it more fun for us to know a little bit about your experience level. So with this, I'm going to go ahead and just give you all just a second or so more to send in your response. Make sure you hit that submit button. And now let me close it and share those results. So Rebecca, it looks like almost 3/4 of the audience have never used the mapper before, and about 20% of them have. So a big chunk of this is new to the audience.
Yeah, that's really good. I hope that after today's presentation, you guys will either go out and look at the mapper again or go out and check it for the first time. So we appreciate you guys participating in that. So we're going to dive right into the mapper discussion. And the first thing we're going to talk about is the data that was included. Repowering started really with an idea that maybe contaminated lands could be put back to use, and at the same time, they could help communities meet renewable energy needs, or maybe even help repower remediation at the site. So EPA started researching this idea, and it quickly became apparent that a lot of these sites were actually suitable for renewable energy siting on them. And at that time, Repowering started talking to EPA offices, some state agencies to help them understand the information that these groups had in their data sets. And they also worked with the National Renewable Energy Lab, or NREL, to figure out how to screen the sites and what kind of information would be most useful to developers to get about these sorts of sites. The data currently included in the Repowering Mapper includes EPA track sites, state track sites, resource data, and infrastructure data. And all the data that is included in the Repowering Mapper is publicly available. So for the EPA track sites, Repowering reached out to various EPA offices and groups to identify the best data sets and the sites in those data sets to include in the Repowering Mapper. The offices provided some insight into their data sets, what kind of information they thought might be most useful to provide for developers. And you can see here on this pie chart that Repowering has most of the sites that EPA does track included in the mapper. New to this update is the inclusion of 50 underground storage tanks, and these are all located in Montana for right now. The addition of these sites this time is a pilot to gauge the interest in renewable energy development at these underground storage tanks. And these sites have locations and sizes that might make them suitable for electric vehicle recharging locations. For the state data, some states have actually reached out and asked to be included in the Repowering Mapper, and others have been identified by Repowering as candidates to include. And you can see on the map here which states were included this update. We have state data from California, Colorado, Connecticut, Florida, Hawaii, Illinois, Iowa, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Missouri, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Texas, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wisconsin. We got a kind of a good distribution geographically, and we have some states in each of the EPA regions. It's important to note, though, that some of these states might have additional contaminated lands, landfills, or mine sites that aren't included in the Repowering Mapper right now. For example, in West Virginia, we only have coal mine lands included in the mapper right now. Some of the benefits for including the state data is the inclusion of different site types from what EPA tracks and a greater number of sites that are available to communities and developers to explore for that renewable energy development. With every update of the mapper, Repowering does research and identify states that might be good candidates to include in that update. So this includes identifying what kind of data these states have available and then reaching out to the states to see if they have an interest in being included in the project. Repowering does then work with the states to make sure that the data included is represented correctly. The states provide information about which data sets they manage they think would be good to include, and if any of the sites in the data set should be excluded for whatever reasons. And then they review the write-ups and the contact information that we include in the data documentation for the mapper just to make sure that that's okay. It is important for Repowering to have that a little bit of collaboration with the states, which really helps to aid in understanding the data limitations and actually helping spread the word about the Repowering Mapper out to their constituents in the states. All the sites included, both the EPA and the state tracks, they have linked to either a site-specific profile page or to the group that manages the information related to the site. So users can get more specific information about the sites if they're interested. How many sites are included? There are a lot of sites included in the Repowering Mapper this update. We have over 190,000 sites that are screened. The majority of these are state-provided sites at about 147,000 with 37,000 that are EPA track sites. So do you have data or do you know of data sets that you think will be a good fit to include in the Repowering Mapper? Please let us know. Here's some contact information. This contact information is also available on the Repowering website. At a minimum, the data needs to have locational information, so either latitude and longitude coordinates for the site or a geocodable address. We do like to have sites with acreage information, but that isn't a requirement. You'll see as we get a little further along in the presentation that the acreage information is included in the screening criteria. So if you have data that you would like to see included, just reach out to Laura or your regional team contact and let them know, and we can get in touch with you about that. In addition to having information about the sites themselves, the mapper also includes resource data, and this includes things like wind speed at various hub heights, solar irradiance information, biomass feedstock, and near surface ground temperatures there. This information helps identify sites that might be a good candidate for renewable energy based on resource availability. And EPA worked with NREL to get the wind speeds, the solar irradiance values, and the biomass data sets, and with Southern Methodist University for the geothermal resources. Distances to transmission lines, substations, rails, and roads are gathered and provided in the mapper as well. This information is used in screening criteria, and it's useful for developers in understanding access to the sites and if transmission lines are nearby. So after gathering the data, it all needs to be screened. And here's the screening criteria. This screening criteria was developed in partnership with NREL, and NREL has staff that has expertise with solar, wind, biomass, and geothermal. For these screening criteria, NREL considered site size, wind, resource values, and that's things like the wind speed, the solar irradiance, and feedstock. Distances to roads and transmission lines, so we can get the equipment in there to the site and interconnect to the transmission lines if that's what's required for the site. Different scales of renewable energy were identified for solar and wind, and this is really based on that site size, so the acreage information that comes with each of the sites. And we looked at utility scale, distributed or community scale, off-grid, and facility scale for solar and wind. We also have another category there, that unknown acreage, and that's for sites that we have really good information for. We just don't know the site size. So for those, the developers or the community might need to do just a little bit more research to see what scale of renewable energy could be installed at that site. So for solar, this update, all sites screened positively for solar. The variable there is the site size, and that will determine how much solar can be installed. Wind resource is more important for wind. We need sustained wind speeds to make that renewable energy type work at the site. Biomass is looking at biopower and biofuel production, and it takes into consideration feedstock within 50 miles of the site. And then geothermal, that's looking at ground source heat pump for this update. And this is really for supplying heating and cooling to buildings. So the site needs to either have an existing building or it needs to have buildings nearby. So a parcel that's adjacent to the site, or there need to be plans to build buildings on the site. And one other thing for this particular technology is it can't be in an area with permafrost. So that does rule out a couple of sites in Alaska, but most of the continental US there does qualify for the geothermal ground source heat pumps. So the sites are screened. What did the results show? What does the data mean? And how does EPA get this information to the users? Here are some of the results. So we have screened 190,000 sites for renewable energy potential. Of that, 158,000 sites screened positively for renewable energy in states that have a renewable portfolio standard. And that renewable portfolio standard just really sets a requirement for renewable energy production in that state. We have about 71,000 sites that screen positively for renewable energy in states that have a repowering policy. And a repowering policy is a policy that encourages renewable energy on contaminated lands. So the policy is specific for landfills or brownfields, sometimes mine sites, really just underutilized land that might not have another reuse potential for it. And this is, these states usually put these policies in place to preserve open space or farmlands where, you know, open space and farmland is really important to communities. So they want to put a little bit of priority on these contaminated lands and give them a little bit extra credit or a multiplier for having them developed. And in repowering, we're seeing that a lot of states that have this sort of policy are actually developing a lot more of these renewable energy sites on the contaminated lands. States like Massachusetts, New Jersey, and New York, they've had policy like this in place for a while, and they are consistently the top three sites for renewable energy development on contaminated lands. We also screened 34,000 sites for distributed scale photovoltaic or larger in states that encourage community solar or shared renewables. So this is for people who live in apartment buildings or maybe at their homes. They have a bunch of trees that create a shading problem, or the roof isn't in the right direction to install solar panels. This allows those folks to be able to buy into or subscribe to renewable energy so they can engage with this community solar and get a subscription for it. And that allows them to have renewable energy where they may not otherwise be able to install panels or wind turbines on their properties. And then finally, we had about 82,000 sites screened positively for off-grid solar. And this could be used to reduce on-site energy use or power green remediation. Sometimes these sites are remotely located, and if they have some long-term energy intensive remediations at them, green remediation is a good use for offsetting costs for that remediation. So pulling it all together, the end products, how do we get this information to folks? There's three different main end products that came out of the Repowering Mapper. We have the interactive mapper itself, the Repowering Geo database, and then the Repowering spreadsheet. And all three of these end products have the same data included in them. They're just really different ways of getting that information to the users. So if you don't have a GIS group or GIS software, you can use that repowering mapper to kind of get the GIS picture as well as the tabular data out of that. If you do have GIS software and you prefer to look at that on your own without going through the mapper, we have that geodatabase that you can download off the website. And if you're just interested in tabular data, we have the repowering spreadsheet. So all three of these are available on the repowering website. And they all three kind of serve a purpose and meet different audience needs. In addition to those end products, there's also some documentation to go along with it. There's the combined user guide and data documentation document. And this used to be two separate documents, but for this update, we combined all of the documents into one to kind of give you a one-stop shop. So the beginning of the document has that step-by-step user guide and information on how to use the mapping application. And then the last half of that document has details that regarding the data that was included. So it has a screening criteria we just showed. It has information about the state and EPA data sets that were included. And it has some information about the screening process and the limitation to the data included. And then we have the mapper fact sheet, and that has more statistics and facts in there, a little bit more information about the individual technologies that were explored for the repowering mapper. And it just has some of these neat little stats that go along with it. There have been several iterations of the repowering mapper over the years. It started out as static maps, so just some paper maps, and on the Google Earth platform back in 2008. And it's continued to grow and improve with each update throughout the years. So in this update, the Repowering Mapper 3.0, Repowering made some substantial changes to really improve the user experience. And that was based on input and feedback from the user. So as if you're using this new mapping application, you see ways to improve it or things that could be changed, please feel free to reach out and let us know, because we do take that into consideration. And the information will likely be updated in the future again, so we can take that into consideration with those updates. This update utilizes the latest Esri platform. It increased the number of screen sites to over 190,000. So we updated that screening criteria based with the current market trends and what's really happening out there in the real world. Added some more tools. There's some customized filters that with the intent of allowing users to get that list of sites that they want a lot quicker. So if you're interested in landfills that had utility scale solar in Virginia, you can do that with just a few clicks of some of the filters and queries that are out there. It includes additional supplemental layers, and it also has links in there to some environmental justice information, so developers and communities can get an idea about the community that they're installing or planning to install that solar or wind in. When the initiative started, there are just a handful of renewable energy projects on contaminated lands. And today there are over 450 completed renewable energy projects on contaminated lands. And that is also a recent update to this repowering mapper, that we included a layer that has the completed projects in there. And so you can see the distribution of those projects across the US. And you we talked about that policy, and you can see that there are a whole lot of sites here in Massachusetts, and can't really see New Jersey for the text there, but there's quite a few in New Jersey and New York as well due to that solar policy. So you can see the distribution of those completed sites that we know about. And if you click on the individual sites, you get a pop-up that gives you some more information about those. And as if you're going through this information and you see, you think you know about a completed installation that's not included in this layer, please let us know and we'll work to get that added to both the mapper and to the tracking matrix, which is where we track these completed projects. All right, so we have another polling question for you, and I hope those numbers from the first poll here are reversed.
All right, so just like earlier, you'll click on the answer, the circle to the left of the answer that you'd like to, and then go ahead and hit that submit button. I'm seeing a lot of responses coming in. We're about 60% of the audience having voted. And yes, Rebecca, the pattern is shifting a bit, but remember, we want to give all of you a chance to share your thoughts here before I close this poll down in just a second or two. So I think I'm going to close it and we'll take a look at those results here in 3, 2, 1. All right. So it does look like about 2/3 of the audience says, yes, I think I'm going to plan on using this tool in the future. And then about 1/3 or so is still unsure. So they might have more questions about the tool.
Yeah, definitely. If you guys have questions or other things you want to ask, and maybe when Kelsey gives her part of the presentation, she'll persuade the rest of you guys that are unsure to at least go out there and give it a quick check and kind of drive around in there. It's really fun to, at least for me, to go into these mapping applications and just check them out. Last but not least here, we wanted to give a big thank you out to everybody that really assisted with this update. It wouldn't really be nearly the tool that it is without everyone's help. And these are some folks that provided data. They worked on the mapping application. They did some beta testing and they provided some feedback for it. And here we list out those individual colleagues and those state agencies that did provide data. We really appreciate your all's help. It really is a team that makes this application happen. So if you are interested in supplying data that is not included in the Repowering Mapper at this time, please reach out and let us know. And maybe for the next presentation, we can add you guys in here to that. And if you have provided data, please, you know, after this presentation, maybe it'll be helpful and useful for you so you can go out there and share that information with your constituents and maybe get some of these lands put back into productive reuse and benefiting the communities. In addition to the mapper, Repowering does have some other products out there. There's the tracking matrix, and that has those completed sites included in it. And then we have a benefits matrix. So, you know, if you have some folks that are on the fence about what benefits there are to this type of development on these lands, you can take a look at that benefits matrix. And we try to capture, you know, what the developers, what the communities are saying about these sites as benefits and give you some real hard and fast information and numbers about that. And specific details about that site. So without further ado, I'd like to turn this over to what I think is the better part of this presentation and have Kelsey give us a quick demonstration of the mapper. Thank you guys for your time.
Great. Thank you, Rebecca, for that. I am going to take the screen so that I can share the mapper. And so as Rebecca mentioned, I am going to do walk through a live demonstration of the mapper functionality. But before I do that, I wanted to highlight some information that is in the user guide. Rebecca alluded to or mentioned that we have the user guide on the website. And I think especially for the 75% of you that haven't used the mapper before, this will be very important and very helpful. And so here you can see some of the functionality that is included in the new mapper update. And I will walk through most of this during my demonstration, but when you need to reference it again, this is in the user guide. I just wanna highlight, as Rebecca mentioned, there's a ton of data included in the mapper. And a lot of data that we've included in this update in particular, we've added a bunch of layers. So, you know, we have the repowering sites, of course, including the completed projects that Laura mentioned. We have several different geographic boundary layers, infrastructure layers. We have some information about physical site characteristics, and we have some layers that illustrate the renewable energy resources, many of which are included within the attribute table, but you can see them kind of on a broader scale. And then we have some information about the various electricity, grid management and planning boundaries, and some demographic information included from EJ screen. So with that, I'm going to move over to the mapper. And this is the mapper. So for those of you who haven't used it yet or haven't seen it, they, when you first open it, there will be a little pop-up welcoming you to the mapper, but this is kind of the home screen. This is what will show up when you first log in. And so I'm going to walk through some functionality here. I'm going to start by turning on. We can see all the layers that are included here as well as the legend. So that's really helpful. I know all these orange dots are the screen repowering sites. The purple triangles are the completed sites. And so you can turn on what you wanna see, what's helpful for you. I encourage you to really explore what all is included here. I'll highlight some of it during this demonstration, but there's a lot here. So when you go in, please do explore everything that we've included here. So I'm gonna walk through some hypothetical situations, some ways that you can use the mapper to find a site that works for you. As Rebecca mentioned, we have over 190,000. So that's overwhelming, and surely you're not going to be interested in all of them, although it is impressive to look at. But I want to highlight some different ways that you can use the mapper to narrow down and find a site that suits your needs. So the first, I'm going to pull up the predefined queries. These are some various combinations of contaminated lands and electricity types that repowering knows are fairly common amongst our users. So we just wanted to make it easy to populate those queries quickly. So I'm going to, for example, say I'm interested in utility scale wind on abandoned mine land sites. This is a predefined query that repowering has already created. So I just need to apply it. And I can see, okay, so we went from 190,000 to 21. So that's definitely narrowed down, but this isn't helpful yet. I want to be able to see them on the map. So I go up to these little dots up here, and that brings up the action menu. So I can show all of these sites on the map. And I do want to just point out, so you can see here in the results pop up that we are showing 100 sites per page. So this is a pretty small query, but for some of the larger ones, especially within the solar, you might need to scroll through to see all of the sites on the map highlighted here. So hypothetically, if I were to look through these and I say, okay, this one looks interesting, it's in Minnesota, great, so am I, that suits my needs, I can, first of all, I can export all my results to various different file types. So I can export it to CSV, for example, if I want a quick and easy way to look at all the data that's included here. It's the same data, but if you prefer Excel, you want to do some filtering through that, you can do that fairly easily. But I'm interested in this site. I think it has potential for what my needs are. So I'm going to, I selected it. You can see the blue little box around it. And I'm again going to go to my action menu. And I just want to see it on the map. So this will zoom into it. You can see, yep, it's in Minnesota. You can click on it. And you can see all the same information that's here, but in this little information pop-up, which happens when you click on or select a site or various feature within the map. So that's one way. That's the predefined query way. It's kind of the most basic. You know, there's not a lot of filtering that went into that. It was the, like I said, the queries that the repowering team kind of preloaded into the mapper. So I'm going to show you a different way now. So I went to this home button. It moved me back into the default map view. I'm going to go down here to the little trash can and remove my results from my previous inquiry. So this second way is more user involved. And so say you have a really good idea of what kind of site you're looking for. You have some specific criteria that you know you want to narrow down based upon. So you can use your own filters here, and you can filter on a lot of the information that you include or that we've included within each site, the screening material or the screening criteria, like Rebecca mentioned, permafrost, connectivity. So in this, again, hypothetical instance, say I am in Massachusetts, so I'm going to select that from the state filter and then turn on that filter. So great, we've gone down to, there are about 2,700 sites in Massachusetts. That's helpful, but I know I can narrow it down further. Say for my specific needs, I'm looking for a site maybe between 50 and let's say 100 acres. And in this hypothetical situation, I'm a solar developer and I know that for my particular project to be viable, has to have at least 10 megawatts of PV capacity, and let's just say I want to hypothetically max out at 1,000. Okay, so this is great. We've narrowed it down to 56 sites. That's much more manageable. But I also know that I want it to be at least within a mile of the nearest transmission line. I want it to be fairly simple to connect to the pre-existing grid, not out kind of in the middle of nowhere. And so based on those, four filters, I have narrowed it down to 36 sites, which is a much more manageable list of sites to go through, especially since I already kind of had an idea of what type of site I was looking for, some aspects of that. So let's really dive into these sites and open up the attribute table, which has the information for these 36 sites. Again, it's a ton of information that we've included for each site. I won't go through it all here, but it has screening criteria as well as some site information and environmental characteristics. So hypothetically, I have spent some time going through all of this and I have decided this site seems particularly promising for my needs. I see it's a super fun site. And so I'm going to again, just make my pop-up smaller, but I'm gonna again go to my action menu and I'm going to zoom to it on the map. So there it is, there's my potential site. And because it's a super fun site, I know that we have super fun site boundaries in the mapper as a layer. So there it is, there's my site. You can see this is the one that I've decided meets my hypothetical needs. So it looks promising, I feel good about this, but I wanna know, there's some buildings over here, maybe some buildings here, but what is really happening on this site? So I'm going to change the base map, went to this button down here, and change the base map to be a satellite image. So I can see, okay, there's really not a lot going on here in this site. This particular one, I know if you zoom out a little bit more, you can see some solar panels are already here, but hypothetically, we're going to pretend that this is an undeveloped site. And so, I think there's maybe some potential up in this northern corner here. This looks like a pretty open area here. So this could be good. This could work for me. I don't know what's happening here. It looks like maybe there's a little bit of a hill. So luckily we have a slope layer included in the mapper. And that really shows you the relief of the hill. There's very steep here, a little slope here, but again, it's pretty flat on top and flat around this. But now I can no longer see my my base map. So I'm going to here, that's the legend, right down here, I'm going to decrease the opacity of it so that I can still see what's happening underneath it while just including kind of a hint of that slope layer on top of it. And you can do that for most layers in the mapper. So again, I think this is pretty good. I feel optimistic about it. I maybe want to move forward with it, but before I do, I just want to make sure that the area included here is viable for my needs. And so maybe I'm going to start just up in this top little bit here so I can measure the area of this part. If my mouse will come along with me, there we go. And so maybe this is like a good place to start. At least I can kind of explore some other areas of this site later. But let's start with just this little bit up north and see how big that is. See if my thing will stop measuring. Okay, so this is pretty good. I feel good about it. It's about 17,000 meters squared. So that seems reasonable. I think that I can go ahead with this. That seems like a good amount of area to start with. So that's how you can do that, how you can narrow down the site list based on your own specific criteria. If you have some really unique situations or you already kind of know what your needs are, you can really drill down based on those details and find a site that really matches your needs. And then once you find a site, you can do a little bit deeper exploration into it. Of course, just looking at the mapper won't tell you everything you need to know about the site, but we do hope that we've given you a pretty good start with the features that we've included in this update. So I'm going to clear this out. So in my Layers and Legends, I turned on a couple things that I don't need for the next part. So I'm just going to press clear up here and return it to the default. I'm going to go back to the base map that we had before and go home again. And clear my filters as well so that we can go back and see the full universe of sites, because now I'm going to show you the third way to use the mapper to find out information about a site. So in this hypothetical situation, I'm in a community that I'm pretty well involved in. So I already know the site that I'm interested in. I've had this idea that I think it might be good for renewable energy reuse. So I'm just going to look it up by the name up here. So I went up to this little search magnifying glass, and I know that my site is called Old Motel. And there it is. It's already been screened. It's in the mapper. Perfect. I can learn more about it this way. So let's zoom in. It's in Arizona, as you can see. And yep, this is my community. That's the site I'm thinking of. I can see it's a brownfield here. And I want to learn a little bit more about it. So we've included some links here, some external links. You can see we have site information, EJ report, and a couple census reports. So I just want to highlight, if you pull up the site information link, gonna load, promise. Well, there we go. So it'll pull up the property details for this site from Cleanups in the Community, EPA's database, and I can see some more information about it. There it is, and I can see, okay, great. It's ready for anticipated use. That's promising. That's a good start for my project. And then I am also interested in EJ report, the demographics around this site. So I can open that. It'll take me directly to the EJ screen report using EPA's version 2.0 of EJ screen. These reports are included for all the sites. And I just want to point out that it is a default of 1 mile buffer around the site. So you can see this is the lat long of the site, and we did a 1 mile buffer around that. And for that 1 mile buffer, that area, you can see kind of here are the environmental justice indicators for particulate matter, air quality, that sort of thing. And you can scroll down and you can get the information, socioeconomic indicators, people of color. There's my site, it's in the 77th percentile. And So I've learned about this. There's some good EJ information here. What else do I want to know about this site? Well, I'm kind of interested in what infrastructure already exists around here. So, I mean, I know the roads obviously are included here, but let's get a little bit more detailed infrastructure. And so if I turn on just all the infrastructure layers here, I can see a lot of this populated. And what are, there's some symbols near it. So let's see, what are these? These are, I can open the legend and I can see, okay, those are electric substations. There's some of those nearby, and electric transmission lines are the purple. Okay, so that's promising. I feel good about that. And then, you know, power plants, various different transportation methods are included here. So, okay, I feel good about this. I learned a lot of information about this site. I want to take it to, I don't know, my boss or the community members to present it to them, to present what I've learned. So we've included a feature here where you can print this into a map. And so we're going to call it the old motel map and print it out. And it's going to take a minute, but I already have it up here. I can get to that tab. So I already pulled this map earlier and this is what it looks like. So you can see all the infrastructure that I included here. It's in there, there's a legend down here, scale. So you can take this map of your site and whatever layers you've included, and you can present it to your community, to your boss, to whoever. And so in this hypothetical situation, I presented it to my boss and said, okay, great, this looks promising, but this is the Southwest. We're concerned about some environmental concerns. And so, for example, wildfire, what is the wildfire potential here? We don't want to build something only for it to be burned down. Okay, that's a good question. Let's check. So we did not include a wildfire layer in our layers and legends as a pre-populated data layer here, but that's okay because down here you can add your own data. So you can do this in three different ways. You can search for existing JS content. If you have a URL to a feature service layer already, you can put it here. Or if you have your own shapefile or file that you want to include here, you can upload it and then add it to the mapper that way. So I'm going to search for a wildfire hazard layer. Hopefully there's one out there. Oh, look, there is. This one down here, that seems promising. Wildfire potential, add it to the map. So again, you can see it's for the whole country. So that's good for a variety of uses, but again, it's kind of covered up all my other information. So it's been added to the layers and legends pop-up, so I can go in and I can see, I can again decrease the opacity so I can see my site again. So here's my site. And if I click on this, the new wildfire layer that I've included, I can see, okay, great, we have low risk here. So not much potential for wildfire hazard. This seems like a good site. I can go tell my boss, the community, whoever asked, that I added this data layer, found out this additional information, and I can feel confident moving forward with this site now. So those are the three ways that you can use the mapper to find a site that suits your needs, and hopefully I've demonstrated some of the additional functionality to help you gain more information about the sites. I'm going to clear what I've had here so I can remove my new fire map from the mapper, go home, and see here are all my sites. So that was a really quick overview. Again, I really encourage you, especially if you haven't used the mapper before, to look at the user guide that we have linked to. And of course, I think it explains basically what I did, but in a little bit more detail and hopefully not as quick of a run through. So with that, I just want to put one more polling question up on the screen. Hopefully most of you think that this was helpful, but please let us know.
All right, so I'm starting to see some of those answers come on in. And again, I'll just ask the audience to take a brief moment here to click the circle to the left of the answer and then hit the submit button. For anyone who might be participating on a mobile device, it should pop up and cover your screen. But if it doesn't, take a look for the three dots or more button, and that'll give you an option to pull up the poll if it hasn't opened automatically on your mobile device. All right, it looks like about 3/4 of the audience have cast their responses. So I'm going to go ahead and end this poll now here. Waiting just a second. And let's take a look at those results. So Kelsey, overwhelmingly, about 86% of the audience felt this was very helpful. And so well done.
Good. I'm glad it was helpful to at least a certain degree. And again, it was really quick. There's a lot of functionality in this mapper. I encourage you to spend some time poking around with it. I'm with Rebecca. I think it's kind of fun. But again, we are really excited about the new functionality. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Laura.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Rebecca and Kelsey. Those were excellent presentations. I learned a lot, and I hope everybody else did too. We do have some questions coming in from our participants, so I'm going to start with some of those. And if we don't get to answer your question today, please feel free to email me. We can do that later on as well. So the first question is, are we planning to expand the states that we have included? And the answer to that is yes, we would love to encourage states to reach out to us or stakeholders to reach out to us. We would be happy to connect with you and talk about what sites you'd like to include for your state. It would take us some time to include that. There is a related question about the schedule, how frequently do we add data? And I'm going to ask Rebecca to talk a little bit about the data and its static nature in a minute. But I just want to say that every couple of years, we do update the mapper. And so I will turn it over to Rebecca to answer the question of part of the question about the data and the schedule.
Yeah, so we throughout the lifetime of the mapper since about 2008, we have tried to update every 2 years. And we do say that it is a snapshot in time. So in that data documentation, in the user guide data documentation, there is a date of when we obtain that data from either the EPA office or the state. And as you know, there are a couple of updates to the MPL every year. I think there are two to those every year. So some new Superfund sites do get added, and Brownfields grantees are added to the Brownfields program. So it won't have the most recent additions of those in there. And the same goes for the states as they update their program. So it is a snapshot in time, and you can get that information from the data guidelines. And I think it's all about 2021 for all of this data around August or in there, but you can see the exact month and date that the data was either provided by the state or the EPA office, or it was downloaded. So if there's a recent MPL site that has been added, there's a chance it might not be included in the pre-screened sites.
Super, thank you so much. So Rebecca, can you access the mapper on your phone or mobile devices?
Yes, you can. I just checked it out on my device and I was able to get there. There may be some exceptions, you know, can't test all the different mobile devices that are out there, but I know that Jesse and I both tested some of those and we were able to get to them. I have a Samsung, an Android phone, so that works. I've not tried it on any of the Apple products, but I would assume that you can get there. There might be a little bit of limited functionality if you can't see the full screen, and it's probably best enjoyed on a desktop or a tablet, but you can definitely access it from a mobile device.
Super. Okay, thank you. So there's a question about, is EPA looking to partner with utilities to create new tools with this data? And we are very open to collaborating and forming making other tools. If you want to reach out to us individually, if you have submitted your question and your question is and you're coming in as an anonymous attendee, if you could either email me directly at strine.laura@epa.gov or provide your email address, that would be really helpful so we can get back to you. But in general, we are looking to collaborate with utilities and any other stakeholders that would be interested in using this information to help communities redevelop sites and to site projects for renewable energy. There is a question about, will we ever collect data from citizens who submit data from their cell phones? I think the nature of the mapper, this would be kind of difficult, but I'll let Rebecca answer that as well.
So it's not intended to be a reporting mechanism for sites, and all the sites that are included are in some way regulated or overseen by a state or federal agency. So I don't necessarily think that it would be a good way to do that for citizens to include it in there. But if there is a contaminated land, there's a pretty good chance that's included, especially if it's coming from one of the states that EPA has collaborated with, because we have, you know, quite a few. I think there is 147,000 sites from the states. So there are 190,000 sites in there. And I know that there probably are a significantly larger number than that. But it's not really a reporting tool for contaminated lands. And we're just trying to access those that have been identified as contaminated and are being monitored by either state or EPA.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. There's a question here about determining the current ownership of a property. Is there a way to do that in the mapper, Rebecca?
The answer to this question is going to be maybe there is a way to do that. So since we do have data from a couple different entities and the information that's collected and reported by those entities is not consistent across the board, in getting that site-specific information, we try to cull that down into the, distill it down into the most commonly reported across all the groups that we're working with and what would be most useful. And I do realize that ownership is one of those things that would be really critical and important, but it's not a feature that we are currently including or attribute we're currently including in the repowering mapper. But in that pop-up bubble, when Kelsey was showing that and she clicked on that site profile, that could be a way that you could get the ownership information for a particular site. And if the ownership information isn't there, you could potentially reach out to either a remedial project manager or someone from the state that might have information on ownership. And, you know, sometimes these parcels do have multiple ownership information. You know, multiple owners for the property, especially in the case of some of the larger Superfund sites. So that is a consideration. And then Kelsey also showed you how to add some data in there. Some states or municipalities do have partial data, and you could overlay that partial data with the repowering mapper and get ownership information that way, which might be helpful. Not every state or every municipality in the state has that level of detail. So that was another thing that we couldn't really add as a supplemental layer because we didn't have a national scale data set for that. And that's one of the things we tried to do with the creation of the mapper is use national level data. So everything's really consistent across there on how we're presenting that and how it's being screened. There are a little bit of exceptions to that, especially when we're working with, we do have Puerto Rico and Virgin Islands in there. And sometimes their data set is a slightly different resolution than what we have for the continental US and Alaska and Hawaii. So you can get there, but it's not abundantly clear in the data set as it is, you know, displayed in the mapper.
Thanks, Rebecca. And I just want to also mention that if you do have a particular site that you're looking at, it is really sometimes helpful to get to the remedial project manager. And we have our list of EPA contacts on our website. So if you can't find it in the mapper, you can always reach out to us separately via email and find, we can potentially help you find more information, for example, about the owner of the site potentially, or other information that may not be in the mapper. So after you've explored all of that, you know, we'd be happy to help you further if you want to get in touch with us that way. So I have a couple questions about additional ways or additional sites that might be helpful to identify nearby. So for example, in evaluating the sites, if you wanted to bring in a layer to look at like oil and gas production, or other data, Rebecca, is that possible to do that?
Yeah, you can add other data sets into the repowering mapper. You can add things that are on ESRI's online mapping system, online ArcGIS. You can add other mapping services that are out there if you have the link for it. So if you have your own mapping application and you have your data, you can put that link into the mapper application and add that. Or if you have a shapefile, you can add that in there as well. So if you have information from Homeland Security or any place like that you want to add, it is pretty easy to add that. Kelsey did do a demonstration of that when she added the wildfire probability, and that is explained in the documentation, the user guide.
Great, thank you. I think some of the questions may have come in before Kelsey's presentation, which is great. I'd like to have this dialogue too. We have a question here about what do the blue and tan colors mean on the map? I think it's the underlying map. Is that right?
So when you open the mapping application, we do have that base map that is I think it's a topo map, and it's kind of a green and tan. And then, and I know everybody's monitors make things look very different. So for me, there's a bunch of circles and those are orange, and those are the screened sites. And then there's some bluish purple triangles, and those are the completed installations. So, and you can get to the information that the legend that tells you what that, Kelsey's going to show that right there. So if you expand that, you get the legend so you can see what the symbology on there means. So, and you can do that for all the layers that are on there. And if you add data sets, you can do that as well too. So hopefully that answers that question.
Thank you. Yes, this is great. All right. Well, I don't see any other questions at this time. So let's take a pause and see if any other questions come in, and we'd be happy to answer them today, or if you want to email us. My email again is strine.laura@epa.gov. We're happy to answer questions later on. If you think of one tonight or tomorrow, please feel free to email us, but we'll pause for a couple minutes here and see if we have any additional questions that come in.
Yeah, and I'll just add that this update was one of the really nice things about it is that we weren't necessarily limited by the number of sites we included. In the past, when we're in the Google Earth platform, we definitely tested the limits of that, and I think maybe actually exceeded the limits of Google Earth there. And we couldn't really add a lot more sites to that application without creating some issues with downloading that and making it display in a manner that wasn't going to drive everybody that was using it a little bit. Make them frustrated, not being able to pull things up and move around. And with this update, the new ESRI platform really has adapted to the 190,000 sites. They load super fast and you're able to scroll around in there. So that's one of the reasons that EPA was kind of going through the state by state and adding them in and looking at the numbers that were in the states as well to not over exceed what the current technology limitations were out there at the time for putting sites into the mapping application.
Great, thanks, Rebecca. So we have another question about how we're working with utilities to help them consider siting new projects on these locations. At this time, we have feasibility study projects that we're doing, and they are at about 10 sites across the country. So we are reaching out to the utilities when it makes sense to do so at those particular locations. And we would encourage anybody who wants to have a stakeholder meeting with their utility around this issue, we'd be happy to participate in that. Just, you know, get in touch with us. So we're very stakeholder engagement friendly, and, you know, we'd love to help people understand the tools and also sort of the backdrop of information that makes the states that are successfully redeveloping many of these sites possible. And so there are lots of tools that are state-based tools that we can talk about. And we'd be happy to connect with you further on that. So thank you for that question. I have a question that's asking if we can please re-show how to determine cleanup progress. Kelsey, do you want to go through that again?
Sure. So I can, the way to do that is to visit the external site information, so the proper or the cleanups in the community. So this is just a site that I clicked on. It's an AML site, so I don't think it'll have that. That data is really limited based on how well EPA tracks it, how well it's reported to EPA. So I know that the brownfields are generally the best at tracking that. And of course, I'm never going to be able to find a brownfield here on the fly. But the way that I found that, if you do find a site that you're interested in, so I just randomly picked this site, it's a landfill, so I don't think that we'll have that information for it. But if you go down here, you scroll down to the site information, and you press view, it'll take you to the external page here. So this is for a Colorado site, but, and so you can dig around, maybe they have it, I'm not entirely sure. All these are Colorado sites. But basically, when you do that, if it's an EPA site, it'll bring you to the Cleanups in My Community database. Oh boy, now my computer's. And that has that information there included.
Yeah, and if you do the Superfund site boundaries, I think you might be able to get to that as well. Oh, so the Superfund sites should all have, all the NPL sites should have cleanup information around about them as well, and that AML site you looked at, I think, was NIF wrapped. So,
yeah, of course, I'm picking all the wrong sites, but that's the general way to go about it.
And again, you can reach out to the RPM, the remedial project managers, for them too.
And if the RPM isn't listed, you can reach out to one of the repowering team members or me, and we can help you find that information. So sometimes it will be available on the links from the mapper, and sometimes it won't, but oftentimes you can find it in the site remediation links and the profiles that are included.
So here it is for this one. This is the example I used earlier. Again, it's a brownfield managed by EPA, so it has kind of a specific set of data that they track, including progress. And you can see this is where it said it was ready for anticipated use.
And you got there, Kelsey, by clicking the profile page.
Yep, in so the I selected the site, which popped up this little information pop-up, and I went to site information, which brought me to that external link. Mm-hmm.
And that link is included in the attribute table. So if you export you know, like Kelsey was showing you how to do that. If you export a list of sites, that link will be provided in there as well. And then it's also included in that spreadsheet. So all the information in the pop-up bubble that we've been showing you is in this attribute table as well. Right there is the profile. So that's another way to get to it as well. So you don't have to be in the mapper to access it. You can export your list and look at it later if you want to.
Great, thank you so much. So there's a question. We have been focused on solar, and there's a question about the feasibility for wind projects. Rebecca, do you want to talk a little bit about the sites that are screened for wind?
Yeah, so when we screened all of these sites, we looked for solar potential, wind potential, biomass, and the ground source heat pump. So we did screen for wind, and a lot of those sites are positive for wind. We looked at utility scale wind, then I think it's called community wind, and then facility. So that would be if you're just putting one turbine on there to use it on site. And then we have the no acreage wind category as well. So they were screened for wind. Yes. It's kind of a habit we get into of just focusing on the solar, because that's where we're seeing a lot of the development. But the wind sites that are developed are typically much larger in capacity than those solar sites that are being developed. So they are very important and should not be overlooked in this data set. Thank you for asking that question.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. And just a reminder, there is also information on geothermal, and there's also information on biomass, and those are not as popular as solar or wind. However, they are included, and we do encourage you to look at those technologies as well. Let's see here. We're doing really well on time and questions. Thank you so much for all of your great questions. The questions are just amazing. So in terms of, I have a question about adding data, whether the map will include energy communities as defined by a couple of the more recent bills that have passed. And at this time, we aren't planning to add any data to this particular update of the mapper, but we can help you figure out how to do whatever you need to do to sort the data. So if you have particular focuses that you would like to get assistance with, we would be happy to help you do that. So please reach out. There's probably a way to do just about anything. It's just a matter of, we have closed the update here. So we would need to figure out a way to sort of sort the data in Excel or somehow get you what you need, but we're very open to connecting with you on any particular needs that you may have. Rebecca, did you want to add anything there?
Yeah, at one time in the past, we did have some renewable energy zones included and screened for those, but they were kind of changed pretty rapidly, and it was kind of hard to keep up with that. So kind of abandoned keeping that sort of information in there. It kind of changes with the various political environments for the country and the states. So kind of pulled back on that, but we can definitely help you out with that. And like I said, one of the three products is that the geodatabase. So if you had some geospatial information for those energy communities, you could bring that. You could either bring that layer into the mapper, or you could bring the mapper data into your GIS and kind of overlay that and look there, or repowering could assist you with that as well. So it's definitely an important thing to look at and consider when you are trying to develop these sites, is some of those energy communities or renewable energy zones that they have out there. It's just kind of hard to keep up with all that and be relevant to how things are changing.
Thank you. Okay, we have a question, Rebecca, about can you screen to see only the ready for reuse anticipated ready for reuse sites?
Yeah, there is no easy way to do that, unfortunately. And that goes back to my earlier explanation for some of these things is that we're getting information from multiple entities and we're trying to distill it down into something that we have information for across the country for. So there's no easy way to screen for that ready for anticipated use sites in the data set currently, and that information does kind of change frequently as well. But I will say that there's advantages to getting in before these sites are ready for anticipated reuse. And you can take care of some things like grading or some of the institutional controls, and you could kind of plan for the redevelopment along with getting the site ready for that reuse. If you know that you have a landfill that you want solar on, that can kind of be incorporated into the closing of that landfill. Or if you're looking at a brownfield site or even a Superfund site, as they're in there cleaning that up, you know, as they get specific operable units ready, or even before then, you can kind of work with them to make sure that you can incorporate some of the work that needs to be done for the renewable energy siting into that. But I wish there was a way to screen for those sites, but we currently don't have that in there.
Thank you so much. All right, well, thank you so much. We are getting to the end of our time. And I really wanna thank Rebecca Kent so much for her efforts on this mapper. I just want to say she is the sort of brains behind this operation, and we really couldn't do it without her. We also really want to thank our state collaborators, the folks who we reach out to say, is your data set still relevant? Is this the one you want us to use? And we hope that this presentation today has been helpful to you. If you have further needs, if you have questions about how to utilize the data in your state, please reach out to us. We are happy to connect with you on an individual targeted team meeting. So thank you so much to Kelsey for the live, the most exciting and probably most difficult part of this presentation. You did a great job. We thank you so much for your efforts here. And thank you, Jean, for running this webinar today. As always, it's always great to work with you. And I'm going to turn it back over to Jean so she can close out the webinar.
All right. Thank you so very much. I want to echo your thanks as well to the over 100 individuals who joined us for today's live session. Before we close out this afternoon session, I'd like to walk through a few quick reminders. So the first thing that I will encourage you to do is to be sure to visit us at the Cleanup Information Network at cluin.org. Look for some of those connection icons to sign up for our RSS feeds or podcasts or our monthly newsletter, Tech Direct, which goes out on the first of each month. And we'll highlight webinars such as today session, so you can find out what we have scheduled for free online information and technical training through that newsletter. The other thing that I want to walk everybody through is just a gentle reminder, if you weren't here at the beginning, if you're looking for copies of the presentation material, which has lists to the resources and the links, you'll find those on the seminar homepage. So the URL shown in red on this slide is active from today forward. So you can visit that URL. It's the same place where you went to sign up. It's the same place we would have pointed you to when checking in today. So you can bookmark that and access it later. You can also share that with colleagues. I'll just note that you may have to scroll up and down on the page and look for plus and minus icons on the far right to expand or collapse various sections. Again, we've already posted the presentation materials on the webinar slides and then included a number of links that were highlighted in the sessions, such as links to the mappers, the tutorial, the fact sheet, and the mapper homepage under related URLs or websites. Now, for those of you who are looking for a participation certificate, I would encourage you to fill out the online feedback form. If you fill out the feedback form, which is available through the seminar homepage that I just highlighted, there will be a box that you can check at the bottom of that feedback form, certifying you were here for the entire session. And then once you submit your feedback, as long as your email address has been entered correctly, you will get a copy of a participation certificate by email. You'll also have the option available to download the certificate right from the confirmation screen. Sometimes our emails get blocked by spam or junk filters, so I encourage you to take that option and sort of download it or save it from the confirmation screen as well. If you happen to share the line with multiple people at your location, each person can actually fill out that feedback form, even if they didn't register individually, and get their own certificate of participation. So I ask those of you who did register, please get that URL, that Red Seminar homepage URL, and share that with your colleagues so they can get to the link to the feedback form. And if you happen to be one of the lucky people replaying the recorded version of today's webinar, you can still visit that website shown in red and fill out the feedback form based off of your replay of the archive to get a certificate that you can save for your own records. And right about now in the online archive, just above my head in the upper right, there should be a button linking directly to that seminar feedback form. If you have any problems with that, you can feel free to reach out to me directly at ballot.jean@epa.gov. Now, we will send out an automatic email as soon as the archive is available for on-demand playback. So please give me about a week or so. We usually get those posted. And again, I do know the organizers are interested in hearing your thoughts and feedback. So please share your thoughts in that online form. And of course, you can also reach out to Laura Strine directly if you have additional follow-on comments or questions about the tool. So with that, I'll go ahead and thank everybody one last time for all of our wonderful speakers and all of you who joined us online. We hope that this has been a valuable expenditure of your time, and we'll have you connecting with us on a future webinar. Go ahead and enjoy the rest of your day. This will be the formal conclusion for today's live broadcast.